And now I'd like to introduce this evening's program participants. Dr. Crawford, as you know, is our keynote speaker. Steve and Marge Paradise and Sandy Yeager will also be available to respond during the question and answer time after Dr. Crawford talks and we have more of a discussion. Dr. Mitchell Crawford is the Director of Addiction Services for WellSpan Philhaven. Dr. Crawford provides support and creates clinical services for the treatment of addiction throughout the entire WellSpan health system in Adams, Franklin, Lancaster, Lebanon, and York counties. He receives specialized training in the treatment of substance use disorders, such as those involving opioids, alcohol, and nicotine. He's an advocate of medication-assisted treatment that uses medications in combination with counseling and behavioral therapy for patients with substance use disorders. His goal is to alleviate suffering by meeting patients where they are in their journey and supporting them in their recovery. A native of Lancaster County, Dr. Crawford earned his medical degree from the Philadelphia College of Osteopathic Medicine and did a psychiatric residency at Harvard Medical School and VA Boston Healthcare.
Great. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that very warm introduction. Can everyone hear me okay? Is the volume all right? Yep, lots of shaking heads. That's good. That's a good start. All right. So I want to first acknowledge there's a large amount of people here. I really appreciate everyone making time this evening to come together. I see some friends, some colleagues, some family members, some folks I've never met before. And so I really look forward to spending this time together this evening. I've been asked to talk about kind of four or five different domains, and the first of them is my life experience. And so you've already heard that I've lost a sibling. So I'll start a little bit from the beginning and incorporate that and share with you a bit of how it is that I became here and kind of fill in some of those holes in that bio that was shared. So as was discussed, I'm born and raised in Lancaster. I love Lancaster. It's very wonderful to be back. I went to Penn Manor, played many sports, really enjoyed it. And honestly, I had very little knowledge or exposure to substance misuse. Not many of my friends were misusing substances, not really alcohol, even in high school. And I was pretty naive, to be honest with you. And I got some exposure when my sister, who was 4 years younger than me, had a sports injury, because we were all athletes in our family and injuries happen, but she had an injury that kind of plagued her athletic career. And she ended up having multiple interventions, one of them surgical. And after that, she struggled with opioids. And she was struggling first with opioids that you would take by mouth. Had some kind of escalation over time to, you know, crushing and snorting opioids and then injecting opioids. And to be honest with you, there, of course, our family tried everything we could think of. And there was a feeling of helplessness at the time where there's, you know, we kind of didn't know how to help her and to watch her to struggle and go through this. And she had multiple bright spots. She had some recovery, and it was wonderful to see her flourish in that way. But unfortunately, she died from an overdose with heroin. And that was really a life-changing event for me, as you all who have lost someone very close to you can sympathize with. And so at that point in my life, I was in the tail end of medical school, and I was just about to be starting a residency in psychiatry. I was going to be going up to Boston, which if you know kind of the geography of the opioid epidemic in our country, New England, just like Pennsylvania and Appalachia, really, really struggles with opioid use disorder. And I knew that I was going to be transitioning from, you know, being a medical student to being a resident where, you know, at 3 a.m. I was going to be the person being called and in the room and resuscitating folks. And I didn't know how I was going to react to that. And to be honest with you, I was scared. And so I just decided to go forth. I didn't know what else I was going to do. And to my surprise, I actually really enjoyed providing medical treatment to folks who are struggling with addiction. It was very rewarding to me. I felt like I was able to form an alliance or a connection with folks easier than other sort of treatments that I could have been providing. And I just tried to learn as much as I could. I was very fortunate to get connected with someone who turned out to be one of my mentors, who was very active in the field. And I was excited. I was seeing good results in some patients. And I started, you know, befriending my colleagues, and it was a good experience. I had another tragedy, though, strike during that first year near the end, where one of my colleagues asked me to cover a shift for him and to cover a shift for a weekend so that he could go home to Miami and be with his family for his birthday. And so I did that, of course. I wanted him to have a nice birthday, and I was already working Friday into Saturday. I figured what was the big deal if I worked Saturday into Sunday, and the weekend shot anyway for me. And so I was expecting to hear from my colleague on Monday about how much of a great time he had. And unfortunately, what I found out from his family is that my colleague had died from an overdose and that he had been in recovery for over 10 years. And that was very difficult. These are still very difficult for me, to be honest with you. It's it's a struggle to talk openly about these things, but it's really important that we do this as well. And I'll talk a little bit about that near the end. I found a few things really stuck with me from that experience. One was that it really showed me that everyone is susceptible to addiction, and everyone has experiences that we can't really understand fully. Like I would have never guessed that my colleague was in recovery from opioid use disorder. And it also taught me that folks didn't feel comfortable sharing this kind of information, even more so, right? So this was someone who I had shared many kind of more intimate conversations with, but he never felt comfortable to share that with me. And so that's really stuck with me. So I had a decision, you know, again, another fork in the road to decide how was I going to react to this experience in my life? Was I going to say, wow, you know, even someone who, you know, is a physician and makes it to that level and is dies from an overdose, like, what are we going to do? How do we help people? And this isn't for me. Or do I say, wow, I need to dig in here and I need to learn as much as I can so this doesn't happen again? Or it doesn't happen nearly as much? Or what can I do to try to help with this problem in our country and in the world? And so I had lots of support wrapped around me, and I had lots of opportunity to dive in, and I did. I learned as much as I could. I spent as much time on the various units that I could, tried to soak up as much as I could from my mentors, tried to do as much research as I could, publish as much as I could, get into leadership at the state level, talked, gave grand rounds, and presented at national conferences, just everything I could to get involved in this space and really changed the course of my training to be all about the treatment of addiction. And I was very fortunate. My wife is from Lancaster County too. I ended up marrying a brewbaker from Lancaster. So if you're from Lancaster, you know that's a very Lancaster County thing to do. And so we wanted to come home. All of our family was here. And thankfully, we were able to do that. So WellSpan had an opening for this wonderful position to try to create services in the whole catchment area. So Lancaster, Lebanon, York, Adams, and now Franklin County. And so these experiences now allow me to be in front of you today. And I hope you have your pen and paper, because we're going to really take a deep dive for about the next 2 hours into the neurobiology of addiction. From all my training, I just want to make sure I share that with you. So does everyone have their pen and paper? No? Okay.
Annabelle. Okay.
So, but, you know, all joking aside, I do think it's important to share with folks whenever I can about a very broad strokes about just what addiction is to me, what it is to the medical community. We've probably heard, and we're accepting now, that addiction is a disease of the brain, right? So this is a chronic medical disease. And it really goes further than that too. And so I really appreciate Nora Vocal is one of the biggest leaders at the national level in addiction. And she talks about it, that addiction is not just a disease of the brain, but it's one in which the circuits of our brain that allow us to exert free will are no longer functioning. And so I think that's really important to understand and think about. And if you've experienced folks, either in your treatment, if you're a treatment provider, or in your personal life or in your family, and you've seen them struggle with addiction, and you ask yourself, how can this person be doing this? Or you're blaming yourself, how am I not helping them enough? If you can understand that, it's a disease of the brain, and the behaviors that you're seeing are dramatically changed by this disease, it helps you kind of conceptualize that a little bit more. I think it's important also to recognize that it's extremely multifactorial. And so it's, you know, we have genetic predispositions. We're learning more and more about this at a scientific level about kind of the receptors, you know, where the an opioid hits my brain, maybe a little bit different than where it hits your brain, for example, and that effect. And so maybe someone who has more of an enjoyable experience from that compared to someone else who it's not as enjoyable can be some of the cause of this as well. And then obviously there's the environment that we live in. We're understanding more about adverse childhood experiences and social determinants of health, which are things like food insecurity, housing insecurity, financial insecurity, and how this all kind of wraps together. And it's not just, and I say just kind of with quotations, just this disease of the brain. So there's so much around this that we can learn together and support folks with. I want to make an important point here when I'm talking briefly about addiction to share with you all that it's not just the development of tolerance and withdrawal. And I think that's really important because I like to share whenever I have a microphone like this and I can get on a soapbox, a couple points about misconceptions to try to change the way we think about this in our society. And so this one's really important to understand. So if I am a human being and I take 10 milligrams of oxycodone 3 times a day for 3 months, one thing is going to happen. I'm going to develop tolerance. And because I'm a human being, and this is neurobiochemistry, which means that when I take those 10 milligrams at the end of those 3 months, it's not going to feel the same. It's not going to have the same power when I take it. And the other thing is I'm going to experience withdrawal, right, if I stop right away. And that's just human biology. And so just because someone experiences tolerance and withdrawal does not mean they have an addiction. It is a part of the addiction process, though. And so when I talk about some of these misconceptions, I'll talk about the one that's related to first. And I'm a huge proponent of medication-assisted treatment. And one thing that I hear kind of often is that medication-assisted treatment is just one substitute of an addiction for another. And I just want to share with you that that's not actually what medication-assisted treatment is. And so the medications that we're providing to folks, and even some of these don't work this way, but medications like Suboxone or Methadone, if you've heard of those, or Zubsolve or Subutex for opioid use disorder, they're not substituting an addiction, right? An addiction is all the other stuff, spending a lot of time preoccupied about finding a substance, if you're getting having cravings to use, being triggered to use, those sorts of things. What we're actually treating is the kind of human biology. So we're allowing folks to not have this constant need to have those receptors be filled by an opioid, for example. We're providing that to them so that we can take some of the biology out of this and we can allow them to focus on their treatment. And we can do the therapy with them and we can get them engaged in more aspects of their lives. And so it's really a difference. Like addiction is different than tolerance and withdrawal. And if there's questions at the end, I can really dive into that deeper, but I just want to bring that up with you. Some other things that I hear misconceptions about, I don't think I have to address this with this group, but that if you're addicted, you're a criminal. That is nowhere in the definition of addiction that you're a criminal. But we hear that sometimes. And one that also comes up often is that addiction is a moral failing. And so I hope that, you know, sharing with you what Nora Volkow had talked about and sharing with you a kind of very broad strokes about addiction, that you would understand that that's actually not true either. And so there those kind of like grin and bear it approaches, like if you really wanted this, if you were really ready for treatment, then you wouldn't have had that, you know, slip, or you wouldn't have returned to use, because you must not just want it bad enough kind of approaches are not something that I advocate, and I don't believe that are based in science. So if addiction is a disease and it's a chronic disease, then there must be treatment, right? So we talked about medication-assisted treatment. There's lots of other treatment. I see Jamie here. She's one of a therapist that I know and value and appreciate very much. And I saw Rhonda as well. And I know she does wonderful work too. And what I can share with you about the treatment, there's a very, I consider what we call landmark study about treatment in this space, in that folks respond to treatment and have adherence to treatment for addiction in the same way that people with other chronic medical diseases do. So the treatment response rates, the amount of folks who have sustained recovery, for example, is very similar to the amount of folks who do really well controlling their high blood pressure and who are able to bring their A1C into what's considered the target range, or are able to not have as many COPD exacerbations. And in the same way that people have difficulty struggling to engage in treatment or having quote unquote no-shows or not taking medications the way that they're prescribed, surprise, surprise, the rates are pretty much exactly the same for folks who have high blood pressure and diabetes and COPD. The difference is when you come back to your primary care doctor, this is not to pick on primary care docs at all. This is just a hypothetical situation. You go back to your primary care doctor and he says, well, your high blood pressure is high again. And, you know, oh, yeah, I ate a little bit too much salty meat. I forgot to take my blood pressure pills for 2 days in a row, et cetera. They'll say, oh, okay. And they'll continue treatment. Unfortunately, what we've seen in the addiction treatment space is the same response, you know, oh, well, I had a return to use. It happened a week ago. You know, I'm back now. I'm doing really well. I haven't used, and I've been taking my meds, but I forgot, you know, yesterday, and I just want to talk to you about it. There's been historically a very different response to that person who shares that information honestly with their provider. And in many times, that person would be kicked out of treatment, which, if we think about it for a second, this is someone who's sharing honestly with their treatment provider about how they're struggling. And if anything, we should be providing more support to them. If there were any other disease, right? If there's any other disease that someone came to you and said, you know, I'm actually having a lot of trouble remembering to take my blood pressure medication. I really want to do it, but it's just really hard and I'm struggling. I'm pretty sure that we wouldn't say to them, well, you know what? You didn't take it the way I prescribed it, so you're out. So, you know, here's 3 days, find another physician if you can. I wish you the best, but it's just not working with me. I'm pretty sure we'd say something like, well, maybe we can have the nurse call you. Maybe we can set an alarm on your phone. Maybe we can see you weekly for a little bit because it seems like you need a little more support right now and I really want to help you through this time. And so I just want to kind of plant those seeds. I know they're probably already in your head already, but please share this information with throughout the community. We really, we're really charged to change the way that we view addiction and addiction treatment and our colleagues and our friends and our family. We owe it to those we've lost to really change the treatment paradigms that we live in. And so the last section here, I want to talk to you about kind of translating these experiences. And so the first thing I want to share with you is that it's really important to take care of yourself. And so when I was starting to like really learn how to be a physician, you know, those, as I was sharing with you, being the only doctor, you know, covering a couple hundred beds in a hospital overnight, One of the things you learn really quickly is when you're trying to respond to a code, quote unquote. So someone who's unresponsive, do you have to place lines? Do you have to do CPR, all this kind of stuff? What's happening? And there's a saying that the first pulse you should check when you come in the room is your own. And the thing that stuck with me about that is it's kind of translatable to everything we do. And so if I'm not taking care of myself, if I'm not taking care of myself as a husband, as a son, as a physician, as a, you know, you can go on and on and on, I can't really help those around me because I'm not in a good position to help them. So I encourage you all, whether you're struggling with grief now, you're struggling with substance use yourself now, or you know someone who is and is affecting you, to please reach out and get help. We have lots of treatment now in the region. We have lots of opportunities to get that help. I'll share a slide at the very end here when I'm finishing talking that I've just put some of these together in our region. And I really encourage you to get that help so you can continue to help others. Then I want to challenge you, when you feel like you're in that position, if you're not there already, to really translate that experience into action. So you've lost someone who is extremely important to you, and you have this experience that unfortunately is not unique anymore in our country and more so in our world. And we can translate this loss and this experience we had into helping others, into helping this happen less. I like the organization Not One More, even if it's just for their name. I think that's just so powerful that, you know, we're just not gonna, we can't have one more death from this disease. And so, you know, again, I want to just thank you for coming together tonight. I think, you know, it's really important when we come together and we talk about this, because there's a stigma, right? I feel it, even though I don't believe it, I still feel it. I was just talking at the courthouse in Lebanon, and I was wondering in my head as I'm going up to grab the microphone, like, I wonder what these folks in the crowd think about me, or what I'm going to say, or I wonder what they think about addiction, or I wonder if there's someone walking down the sidewalk. And that's terrible, right? If I was up there and I was talking about my sister who died in a car crash, or my sister who died from cancer, I probably wouldn't be thinking the same thing about whether or not someone's going to be judging me about how my sister died in a car crash. And so there's a huge stigma here. And so the more that we come together and we talk about this openly and we share our experience and we just have honest human dialogue about this, the more that we reduce that stigma, we're sort of empowering this movement to say, you know what, there shouldn't be stigma here. And the more that we reduce that stigma, we encourage people to feel more comfortable to enter treatment. And so the more that we talk about this and the more that people enter treatment, the more lives that are saved, and we're honoring those that we've lost by encouraging folks in our community to change the way they think and to enter treatment. And so thank you for being here tonight. I'm happy to answer any questions. I can share the screen with you. I'm going to try to share this really, host disabled participant screen sharing. Okay. I will share,
Let me make you a co-host later.
Mitch. Sorry, Patty?
Let me make you a co-host and then you can share screen.
Oh, perfect.
There we go.
Awesome. I'll try it again here. I've been upgraded to co-host. Appreciate the upgrade. Okay. Alrighty. Can you guys see the slide?
Yeah, it's great.
Excellent. Okay. So this slide, I'm going to leave it up here just for a couple minutes or a minute or so. Please take down any of the information you want. This is by no means a comprehensive listing, but there's a lot of great resources here. Our WellSpan Recovery Support Team is a team made up of substance use disorder case managers and certified recovery support specialists. And they are available Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. You can call and they'll help you navigate the addiction treatment space. Whether or not you want to be engaged with WellSpan or not, they'll still help you navigate the treatment space in the community. There's also the warm line here. So this just launched actually last Friday or last Monday. And so this is a really exciting line. I personally feel excited about because this is actually aimed towards providing support to people who are affected by addiction by other people in their lives. And so, of course, if you call and you say, hi, my name's Mitch, I'm looking for treatment, they're going to get you pointed in the right direction. But it's actually directed towards, hi, my name's Mitch, my sister's struggling with opioid use disorder and I'm having a tough time. Can you help me? Can we talk? Can you help me understand what ways that I can take care of myself right now? This is free and it's confidential. You can remain anonymous if you want to as well on that warm line. And it's available 24/7. It's a grant funded. It's funded by the Department of Drug and Alcohol Programs of Pennsylvania, and we're very pleased for that support. This number here for Lancaster General as well is for their main number for addiction medicine. I called and confirmed it today to make sure it was still active, and I actually had a meeting with their director of addiction services and was sharing that I was going to be, providing their number, and he was excited. There's SAMHSA's National Helpline here, 24/7. We have the RAISE Project, who's a wonderful community partner. Compass Mark does great work, and White Deer Run as well. So again, not comprehensive in that it's all-encompassing, but these are just some great resources if you want for yourself or to share with anyone else. So I think I did my 20 minutes of talking. Is that anyone knows me and has heard me talk before knows I can go on a soapbox for a long, long time. So I'll stop myself right now. And if there's any questions, I'm happy to share them.